Ephesians chapter 5, and we're reading verses 21 to 33 again. This is the fourth time we're in this passage, and the last one. You may or may not be pleased to hear. So I'm going to read Ephesians 5 and from verse 21. Let's just pray. Oh Lord, would you bless your word to our hearts? May we have believing hearts and obedient wills. And we ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands as you do to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church, his body, of which he is the Saviour. Now, as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit to their husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church, without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. In this same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. After all, no one ever hated their own body, but they feed and care for their body, just as Christ does the church. For we are members of his body. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. This is a profound mystery, but I'm talking about Christ and the church. However, each one of you also must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. Today I want to be perhaps more practical, more applied than we have been so far. I want to draw together points that we've already made. Let me just remind you that we started 4 weeks ago looking at verse 21, which says, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. And we're told there that all of us are to submit to one another. And we're to do so not because what we think about the other person, but we do so in the fear of Christ. And we looked at what that meant. Now, this doesn't do away with leadership structures, but it does call for self-giving leadership, just like Jesus was that servant leader. The next week, we looked at God's design for marriage. And we saw that the relationship between Christ and the church is what marriage is modeled on. And so marriage is a signpost to Christ's relationship to the church. When we think of marriage, we should be looking ahead to Christ and the church and that great wedding feast of the Lamb to come. We saw that as we think about Christ's relationship to the church, this gives us both the pattern and the power for marriage, a marriage that will help other people to see more of Christ. And then last week, we considered how that pattern means that marriage is a covenant relationship. Just as the relationship between Christ and his church is a covenant, so the relationship between a man and his wife is a covenant based on promises. It's not a commercial contract, something that you kind of leave when you think it's not providing for you what you want. No, this is a covenant relationship. And that gives security to both the husband and wife. Security for the husband to love his wife, to hand himself over to her, as we saw it says, and for her to submit to his caring leadership. And the whole purpose is that together they can build each other up to be part of that radiant church. Marriage is not so one or the other can fulfill their dreams, but marriage brings two people together with one new dream, to make and help the other to become more like Christ. Now, there is so much that can be said on marriage, and I'm going to have to limit myself to just three practical points. There are plenty of good books you could read. If you want some recommendations, I can give them to you. But today, for the sake of keeping within, well, I won't say how long, just three practical points. First heading, keep the purpose of your marriage as your focus. Number one, keep the purpose of your marriage as your focus. The purpose of your marriage is not primarily to make you happy, but it's to make you holy. Most people would say, well, it's a happy marriage that you want. And of course, we do want happy marriages. But that's not the ultimate aim. The purpose is to make us holy. Now, holiness and happiness are not mutually exclusive. Actually, the more holy you are, the more happy you will be. But holiness is the aim. You see, this is Christ's purpose for the church. Look at verse 26. He gave himself up for her to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. To be holy means to be set apart for God. It involves doing away with sin, turning from what's wrong, and devoting yourself to God. And the purpose of marriage is that husband and wife can be made more holy. Our marriages are to reflect that relationship of Christ and the church. And just as Christ takes responsibility for the church to lead her into paths of righteousness, so the husband has responsibility to be the head of his wife for their spiritual maturity. Just as Christ is the head of the church, so the husband is the head of his wife. Verse 23. Now imagine a company sending a team of its employees with a leader to set up a new branch of that company, say in a place, I know, Spain or somewhere. And of course, there'll be many things for them to arrange. There'll be the travel arrangements, work permits, the accommodation to set up, food arrangements, transport once they're in Spain. And with so many things to sort out, there'll be plenty of ways to disagree. And actually, a country like Spain, plenty of things that might distract them. And the leader's job is to keep that team united and focused. Similarly, when you're married, there are many things to arrange. You've got to set up a new home. There are the domestic things of cleaning, of meals, of going out to work and so on. There is so much to do. And there will always be disagreements and potential distractions from the main focus. And the roles that God has given to husband and wife are so important. Husbands, God has appointed you to be a Christ-like leader in your marriage. You are the head of the wife as Christ is the head of the church. Verse 23. It's not because you are wiser or better than her, and you'll do well to listen to her insights. But as the leader, God has given you that responsibility to care for and keep unity and focus in your marriage. Just like the leader of that team in Spain, it's that person's responsibility to make sure the team keep focused on their main reason for being there. Your responsibility as a husband is lovingly to ensure that you together are reaching holiness. In the same way, husbands ought to love their wives, just as Christ loves the church. He loves the church, making her holy. That's the purpose of your marriage. Husbands, that's your responsibility. Wives, God has appointed you to help and encourage your husband in his role. Go back to Genesis. She was created to be a help for him. This role is not because she's incapable or lacking ideas, but because she is to be like the church. Verse 24, now as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit to their husbands in everything. You may have heard of the the father's speech at a wedding, and he gives some advice to the new couple and says, well, when your mother and I got married, we decided that she would make the small decisions and I would make the big decisions. And we haven't seemed to have come across a big decision yet. That's not the point. It's not which decisions who makes. The husband has responsibility for everything. Now, that doesn't mean he has to micromanage his wife, not at all. But he has to take responsibility for everything. And she submits to her husband in everything, as to Christ. And so for the wife, your responsibility is to work with your husband under his leadership as he seeks to bring you both to greater holiness. You are not the lesser partner. In 1 Peter 3 and verse 7, Peter describes the wife as an heir together with her husband of the gift of life. This is never a case of one being superior and the other inferior. Actually, we are heirs together with Christ. That's a glorious thought, isn't it? That he gives us so much honour as his church that we're described as being joint heirs with Christ. That's the relationship between husband and wife. Yes, there is leadership, but there's not inferiority or superiority. So how in practice does this work? Well, key to this relationship that keeps this purpose of holiness as the focus are your weekly routines and the way in which you relate as husband and wife. You see, it's no good for that team in Spain to spend half their time on the beach and the rest of their time arguing. They're simply not going to achieve what they were sent there to do, to set up a new branch for their company. They need to establish what will help them to set up that branch, and they need to work together, each person doing their role. And so in our marriages, we need that weekly routine. We need to plan how we're spending our time, and maybe we need to reset every so often. And we need that weekly routine to be such a routine that will help both husband and wife to grow in godliness. You don't need me to tell you, but that involves the means of grace. By that I mean those things that God has given that will help us to grow as Christians. Your quiet time, reading the scriptures and praying on your own. How important, when there are young children in the family, that husband and wife ensure that the other has that time to themselves where they can meet with the Lord. Family devotions. I sometimes say, as we begin family devotions, this is the most important thing that any of us are doing today. Reading the scriptures, praying together as a family. I cannot think of anything more important than any of us could be doing. Coming to church. Ensuring that you as a family or as a couple are in church. Applying the sermon. What's the point of just listening to a sermon and then it just sort of wafts away? Talking over it. Serving within the life of the church. That is a means of grace. Praying together. I think whenever I have preached at a wedding marriage service, I've always made that point. Pray together as a couple. And if that's something that has slipped from your routine as a couple, let me encourage you. Pray together each day. Even if you're exhausted, still pray together. Because as you pray together, you'll grow in holiness. There's also the priorities of the time that you spend. Are things distracting you from your main goal? Have a reset every so often. Keep the purpose of your marriage as your focus. It is that each of you should become more holy. Then think of how you and, as husband and wife, relate to each other. There will be disagreements. That's perfectly normal and natural. It's good to have those discussions. But don't let it become just a life of bickering and competition between the two of you. It needs to be for building up. Sometimes we hurt each other. I don't think it's just Tamar and I who've hurt each other in our marriage. Two people together, there'll be times when they don't agree or they misunderstand or someone does something that actually is very hurtful. And there are two possible outcomes from those occasions. You can either resolve it or you can resent. If you resolve it, actually it becomes an occasion for growing in holiness. If you don't deal with it, it just begins to drive a bigger wedge between you, that resentment. When you talk together, you can always be safe and superficial. Your conversation can really be no deeper than, oh, the news is on at 6, dear. And you never really talk about anything much. Or you can be increasingly open with each other. And the more open you can be together, the more you can help each other to grow in godliness. Your marriage gives you an opportunity to grow in that spiritual maturity that God wants. So keep the purpose of your marriage as your focus. Second heading. Keep the pitfalls of your marriage in mind. Keep the pitfalls of your marriage in mind. Now, we saw last week that as the head, the husband is not to be domineering, but to be caring. And the submission of the woman is not to be that of a defeated enemy, but of a loved wife. It came up again in Psalm 45. Did you notice? Christ, he defeats his enemies. He's that warrior king. But that's not what he does to his wife. She is not a crushed enemy. She is his beloved wife. The enemies are out there defeated, maybe some of them made into slaves, others bringing their tribute. In those days, that's what you would do to those who'd been defeated. But his wife, brought into his palace, is loved and cherished. So the headship of the husband is to be a caring headship. It's like the body with it, the head and the body. They're not against each other. The head and the body are competing or antagonistic to it. It's a disaster. You've got some serious illness if your head and your body are not functioning together. They're united. Verse 28. In the same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. After all, no one ever hated their own body, but they feed and care for their body, just as Christ does the church. But there's a problem. We are self-centered sinners. Love and submission do not come naturally. And the Bible recognizes this. And yet, the scriptures still stick with God's original pattern for marriage. Turn for a moment, if you'd like to Genesis chapter 3 and verse 16. And this is after the fall. Sin has come into the world. And one of the things that results from the fall, one of the things that is going to become difficult, is marriage. And so God speaks to the woman in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 16. This is on page 5 in the church Bibles. To the woman, God said, I will make your pains in childbearing very severe. With painful labor, you will give birth to children. Your desire will be for your husband, and he will rule over you. Now that phrase, your desire will be for your husband, and he will rule over you. Some people have wondered, oh, does this mean that she will have a longing for her husband, and, you know, maybe that longing won't be fulfilled? Or does it mean that she will desire to be over him, to rule him? Well, I think it's the latter. Because this exact same phrase, the different nouns, comes in chapter 4 and verse 7, where God speaks to Cain. And Cain is angry with his brother Abel, because God accepted Abel's sacrifice and not Cain's. And then God says at the end of chapter 4, verse 7, sin is crouching at the door, and here it is, it desires to have you, but you must rule over it. So in chapter 3, verse 6, if we make a little comparison, God says, your desire will be for your husband, but he shall rule over you. In chapter 4, verse 7, sin's desire is for you, but you shall rule over it. Here's the point. Just as sin wants to rule over us, so the wife will want to rule over her husband. And just as we are to rule over sin, so the husband is to rule over his wife. This is the biblical pattern. We do not naturally want to accept it. And it's not just the wife who will struggle with God's pattern for marriage. In Colossians 3 and verse 19, Paul has to tell husbands not to be harsh with their wives. In 1 Peter 3 and verse 7, Peter has to tell husbands to live with their wives in a considerate way. Why? Because husbands have a tendency to be harsh and to be inconsiderate. Husbands tend not to listen as they should, and husbands easily make self-centered decisions. And so we have husbands and wives both struggling to do what they're supposed to do. Husbands are supposed to love their wives, but they will struggle to do that. Wives are supposed to submit to their husbands, but they will struggle to do that. They will want to rule over their husbands. But recognizing these difficulties, again, the Bible does not do away with God's pattern for marriage. And so you may be asking yourself, how can I submit to my husband when all he thinks about is himself? Or the husband might be thinking, how can I love my wife when she doesn't respect my leadership and only does what she wants? Well, you do it not because your husband or wife deserves it, but you do it as to the Lord. Verse 22, wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands as you do to the Lord. Verse 25, husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. We have to remember these pitfalls of marriage. Now, we will easily see it in the other. The pitfall is not what the other will do. The pitfall is what I will do. We can always see the faults in other people. What we fail to see is the fault in ourselves. And that's what we need to be aware of. Keep the pitfalls of your marriage in mind. If you're a husband, the pitfall is that you're likely to be harsh, not listen, and be inconsiderate. If you're a wife, the pitfall that you may not be aware is that you're trying to rule over your husband. So first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you'll see clearly to help your husband or wife take the speck from theirs. You see, the only person you can actually control in your marriage is yourself. Don't try and control your husband or wife. A lot of husbands and wives try and do that. You can't. The only person you can control is yourself. The scriptures always focus on what you have to do. The scriptures don't tell the wives, make sure your husbands do this. The scriptures don't tell husbands, make sure your wives do that. No, no. The wives are addressed themselves. The husbands themselves are addressed. Wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ does. How did Christ love the church? While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. When we were powerless, he gave his life for us. That's the sort of love that husbands are called to do. We don't wait for the other to improve. We simply do what we need to do. You don't need permission from your spouse to love them more. You don't need permission from your husband to be more submissive. You see how beautiful God's pattern is. It doesn't actually require the other to be perfect. Christ is the model. Christ submitted to his Father's will, even to death. Christ loved the church when we were still sinners. He even died for her. So keep the pitfalls of your marriage in mind. Be aware of what you are likely to do, and keep asking God to help you. Look to the power and the pattern that Christ gives. Well, we've seen that we're to keep the purpose of marriage as our focus. We're to keep the pitfalls of your marriage in mind. And then thirdly, keep the person in your marriage at the center. Keep the person in your marriage at the center. Now think of someone who knows you really well. What would that person say are the priorities in your life? Now, as a Christian, I hope that person would say your priority is Jesus Christ. Hopefully that's very evident in your life. But what comes next? Ask this person, after my devotion to Christ, what is my next priority? And again, I'm not talking about like emergency situations. You know, of course, if there's an emergency, that becomes the priority. But I'm talking about typical days, typical weeks in your life. What would this person say is your priority? Now, it might be a hobby or some interest that you love researching up or engaging in. That's where you put the best part of your spare energy. It might be your children. Day in, day out, you're there for them, always giving them the best. Delighting in them, rejoicing in them. Or it might be your work. And actually, you don't really mind that your work takes more of your time than it should do. It might be holidays. Having a great time away as many times as possible. That's your great dream. It might be your relatives. Their opinion matters more to you than anyone else's. It might be your home or your family life. You would do anything to make a more beautiful and a happier home. What would this person say is your priority? Now, actually, all of those things that I've mentioned are good in their place. But none of them should take prime place. You see, if you do, then you are loving that more than your wife. Or you are submitting to that rather than your husband. Look at verse 31. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife. And the two will become one flesh. Now, we've looked at that already as the great verse in the scriptures on marriage. But let's just notice the leaving and the being united. When you get married, you say, I am leaving my parents and I'm uniting myself to this man, this woman. But so easily, we fail on both of those fronts. We fail really to leave another priority, and we fail to unite with this woman or this man. Now, here's a cheeky question. I wonder, who is that person that you thought of who really knows you well? I hope you were thinking of your spouse if you're married. Here's a really challenging quote from Tim Keller's book, The Meaning of Marriage. Page 128. If your spouse does not feel that you are putting him or her first, then by definition, you aren't. And when that happens, your marriage is dying. That hit me like a, I don't know what. If your spouse is your priority, then you will want to do for them what I listed earlier. Rather than your priority after Christ being that hobby or that interest, actually it's your spouse where you want to put the best part of your spare energy. If your spouse is your priority rather than your children, then day in, day out, you're there for them, always giving them the best, delighting in your spouse. If your spouse is your priority rather than your work, you don't really mind that he or she takes more of your time than perhaps in other marriages. If your spouse is your priority rather than holidays, having a great time with him or her as often as possible is your dream. If your spouse is your priority rather than your relatives, then your spouse's opinion matters more to you than anyone else's. If your spouse is your priority rather than a beautiful home or happy family life, then you would do anything to make him or her more beautiful, more holy, and more happy. It is a challenge, isn't it? I think we all feel challenged. It's quite shocking, isn't it, when I put it like that? Now, you know me, I'm not here trying to lash people. I hope I'm not come across like that anyway. My desire is that we can glorify God more and more. And perhaps this is more of a challenging sermon than most, but I'm speaking this to myself as well. I need to change. We all need to change. And we need to remember that when we are married, our interests are supposed to be divided. We cannot say, well, I need to do this for God. Because when you read in 1 Corinthians 7, we read this, 1 Corinthians 7:32. A married man is concerned about the affairs of this world, how he can please his wife, and his interests are divided. An unmarried woman is concerned about the Lord's affair. Her aim is to be devoted to the Lord in both body and spirit. But a married woman is concerned about the affairs of this world, how she can please her husband. And the scriptures acknowledge that this is the case. If you're married, you're not to try and live as if you're single. You think, oh, but does this mean we're putting our husband or our wife ahead of God? Not at all. You see, here's the wonderful thing. When you put God first and your spouse is your next priority, that is what leads to a healthy marriage, a marriage that will, in turn, be a blessing to others. You will grow in holiness. Your children will be blessed. It will bless your home, your church, your work, your neighbors, the wider society. In Tim Keller's book, he cited the example of a child whose mother was so keen for that child to excel in something. And actually, it was just really that the mother was trying to fulfill her own dreams through the child. And the mother would devote herself, spending hours and hours helping her child in that particular interest, whatever it was. And actually, all along, the child was miserable because the child saw her parents getting further and further apart because of this. And all her child wanted was her parents to be happily married, to be stable, and that stability would have given her the security. And so I sometimes say to our children, you know, one of the best things that your mother and I can do for you is to stay married. By making your husband or wife the priority, you are truly helping your children. You are truly enabling your home to be happy. You are truly glorifying God. It is a challenge because, frankly, sometimes I'm not the most wonderful person. Maybe always I'm not. And we don't always think our husband or wife deserves, well, we hardly ever think they deserve it. We don't always think that they're so lovely, but this is the challenge. This is how we grow in godliness. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. This is the challenge of Christian marriage, but it's also the beauty. We have the strength from Christ himself. And through that sort of marriage, we can grow in holiness, and people can see more of Jesus Christ in us as we show increasing patience, as we show increasing long-suffering and gentleness and love, and find joy in one another. Is that not what the sort of marriage you want? It has been a challenge. It's been a challenge to me this week. But actually, God's word is not about just challenging us. It's about changing us. It's about making us like Jesus Christ. And I really hope that all of us who are married will talk these things through. I mean, these sermons do go on online, so you can listen to it again. Maybe listen to it together with your husband or wife. And I hope those of you who are not married, who maybe one day will be married, will remember this very high standard that the scriptures give us of what marriage should be. And that you will constantly aim for that so that your life, your marriage, will glorify God. I'm going to be quiet now for a few moments so we can all reflect, and then I will pray.